Our world has become complex and disruptive, and leading teams and organizations takes courage, determination, and skill. This podcast connects you to some of the great leaders to find out just how they do it. You're listening to Russell Boyce and Daryl Crook in conversation with standout leadership in a world of disruption.
Welcome to our listeners around the world to another one of our podcasts where we have a wonderful opportunity here to share some time with a leader coming out of the mining industry, not just the mining industry, but the top end of the mining industry globally, and an opportunity to listen closely to his lessons on leadership, his leadership journey, and of course, perhaps some of the pearls of wisdom that he can pass on to our listeners around the world. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Dr. Craig Stegman. Craig is a managing director within Rio Tinto and has been a professional with Rio Tinto for quite some years. Craig, welcome. It's great to see you today. It's great to be having this conversation with you.
Yeah, hi, Daryl. Yep, likewise.
Craig, could you just start perhaps by giving our listeners a little bit of background, spend a few moments just telling them about your journey. What got you to this point today of sitting in the role of managing director within Rio Tinto?
Well, it started more than 40 years ago, to be honest. I started out in the mining industry as an exploration geologist, and so very much focused at the start of the mining cycle, looking for different commodities or in different countries around the world. But after a while, I kind of recognized that what really excited me most was being able to work with people and work out how together we could achieve some really neat things. And so I kind of realized that in the mining industry, that was probably more likely to be part of operations or the projects phase of the business. And so after about 10 years as an exploration geologist, I sort of switched out into mining operations, a sort of focus on underground mining, where there's a fair amount of technical component. And but for the last decade or so, I've sort of had a number of roles sort of working on sort of major projects around the world within Rio Tinto's portfolio, predominantly copper, which everyone knows is pretty essential metal for the future of the world. And but then leading for the last probably 7 years, technical teams within the group and sort of working out how we can leverage the technical capability and connect them with the rest of the business. Because, you know, mining is a technical business, but there's a lot of sort of non-mining elements to it as well. But if you don't get the technical right, it doesn't really work. So that's what's sort of been interesting to me, is sort of trying to unpack, you know, how we sort of connect some of these really smart people across the business so that we can leverage them, get the most out of them for the benefit of the company, for the benefit of the communities in which we work, Daryl.
Now, Rio Tinto is a global mining company, and I'm sure that many of our listeners would say, "Oh, I've heard of that company." I think. Can you just throw us a couple of stats, just so that we understand maybe the size and scope of the business?
Yeah, so we're one of the largest mining companies in the world. We produce a whole range of different commodities, from iron ore, aluminium, copper, getting into lithium. A lot of titanium. So just a whole range of different commodities, working across, I think, 16 different countries, about 55,000 employees, a market cap of about 160 billion Australian. So it's, you know, it's quite a big company, very diverse base of employees. You know, we support a lot of different customers around the world, but probably our biggest customer is undoubtedly China.
Craig, in all of that activity that Rio does, and you've been a part of it, in the thick of it for quite a while, What is disrupting Rio? What keeps you awake at night for the sake of the company?
I think the one of the biggest challenges is around capability of people, because we all understand the technology disruption associated with decarbonisation, and our focus is on finding better ways to make produce the materials the world needs, and when you think about those challenges, it's sort of working around what are the processes that we can do better, and inevitably there's a technology element, but probably the one that I keep coming back to is that access to people who can actually deliver the better ways. And we're seeing an enormous amount of challenge because our business is becoming increasingly complex and increasingly specialized, and as a consequence of that, the good old days when a person could be a jack of all trades is kind of going, and we're specializing so much more, which means there's bigger issues around people connecting with each other, connecting the silos of information within an organization, just finding the talent to work in some of our really remote locations. So it's that people challenge that's really disrupting us, I'd say, and the pace of change.
I can absolutely relate to that in trying to lead a team that develops satellites and finding the right skilled people. So, question for you: how do you lead people in your organization through a period of uncertainty when you think we've got A, B, and C to do? It's really hard, it's really complex, and we just don't have the people with the right skills. How are we going to face that as an organization or as a division? How do you lead the people through that challenge?
I think it's a good question. I think where I'd like to start is getting that clarity of purpose. What are we all trying to achieve? Because so often what I see is that everyone sort of brings their own view of what we're trying to do, and if you don't have that alignment, it becomes, things fragment very quickly. So I think getting that alignment of purpose, and then really sort of breaking that down into saying, okay, what are the really key elements of what we're trying to achieve here, and getting that sort of shared purpose, because without that shared purpose, it's pretty hard to move forward. I mean, we all know there's lots of other elements there around the kind of team you build, the trust that you have within a team, your ability to have those really critical, crucial conversations. All of those things matter, but if you don't have that shared purpose at the beginning, it becomes pretty hard.
Craig, I'm just wondering right now, our leaders are sitting there around the world, our young leaders, our future leaders, our mature leaders, they're thinking 50 plus thousand people dotted across, how many countries did you say, Craig?
I said 16, but I've probably 16. Missed a few. And so
somewhere
just while you didn't
there.
Ask me to list them all, yeah.
16 odd countries around the world. And here you are as a senior executive, and you're talking about not only the clarity of that purpose, but getting alignment across thousands of staff around the globe. Talk us through what is that? How do you do something like that from where you're sitting?
Well, I don't think it's very easy, because we're constantly trying to work out how we can do things better. But I think we sort of we've got to start with that common goal that I talked about, some common values, and really being clear, about how that translates down to an individual part of the business. So, some of our businesses are very large. Some of them are quite small. Some are developing businesses. Some of our mines have been around for over 100 years. So, you sort of they're all part of this bigger puzzle, and kind of just breaking it down to how each can contribute. What are the critical sort of drivers at each of those businesses? I think that's kind of the way I think about it, at least, is to say, you know, what is this unique value proposition for this business? What are the unique challenges? But you know, they're all trying to head in the same direction.
How do you actually get that message into the minds of the people at the coalface, so to speak?
Well, you know, in the times when I've been directly in the operations, it's only through lots of conversations and lots of listening. And, you know, we have lots of different mechanisms to try and get people's feedback. But that's it starts with conversations and listening to people to understand how they are interpreting it and sort of, you know, being able to challenge this and be challenged yourself. You know, in my current role with leading a group of technical people, probably, you know, the biggest challenge is just getting everyone aligned around what are we trying to achieve in the business? Because each one of the people our team brings some pretty unique, pretty specialized skills. How do we apply that? You know, and I guess the other ingredient that we're seeing that's not only is as important, if not more important than what they do, it's how they actually deliver that. And, you know, start getting technical people to think a lot around how we can be more effective. And it's often through the way we engage with people.
Yeah, Craig, some of the managers listening in, and you know they sit there, and maybe they're a senior manager somewhere around the world, and they would say, well, you know, we're listening to this guy, and he's talking about having conversations, and he's talking about engaging. Surely he would just send an email out to tell them what to do. But why is it that you're leaning toward, as a leader, why is it you're leaning toward the value of conversations and engagement? Can you just unpack that a bit for us?
Well, I guess I just haven't been very successful telling people what to do, Darryl. It's just I've sort of found that everyone kind of wants to work it out for themselves, and so, you know, being able to have a conversation which maybe prompts different leaders to reflect on different things and about what we're trying to achieve. I think that's kind of, you know, it's taken a while to sort of learn this, but I get better results when, you know, when we're actually having conversations and prompting people to reflect and realize and do something different rather than me tell them what to do.
When the organization or the business unit's in, let's say, consolidation mode, so if I imagine your company, your industry, consolidation mode, I guess, means the mine is operating, it's churning out output. Yep. That getting that alignment, getting people to all sing from the same hymn sheet, to go after things together, must be a very different challenge in that situation than if it's startup phase for a new operation. Do you find that there is a big difference? I certainly find in my own area, if we have a mission to go after, if there's a driving challenge rather than consolidation mode, it's a very different story.
Well, I think in every sort of part of the business that I've been involved with, at least, you know, we're mining a commodity, a resource that's non-renewable, and so part of there's certainly an element of what you say, which is that, you know, once we're in operational mode, it's all about managing, you know, it's what we call short interval controls, managing each shift to be a safe, productive shift, getting everyone aligned in that common direction, and sort of just repeating that, you know, day after day, because our operations are 24/7, 365 days a year. You know, there's a drumbeat. We talk about the drumbeat in our operations, but at the same time, you've also got to be looking out onto the horizon, because, you know, where is this business heading in the next few years or 5 years or 10 years? You know, what are the challenges that are coming about that we need to manage? So, you know, I think that's sort of one of the, well, what I see as one of the challenges is being able to sort of maintain that drumbeat while also keeping a, scanning the horizon, working out where this business is heading. And I think that's what's most fascinating, really, around the mining industry, or what I've seen of it is that it is a constantly evolving challenge, and you need a whole lot of different diverse skill sets and time horizons, time frames that you need to work across.
Craig, Russell asked you before, tell us about the disruption. What are the biggest disruptions for you from a leadership point of view? You actually named two. You said, the capability of our people. And I get that, and I guess our thousands of leaders around listening to this will get that, and they'll say, yes, we're being told that it's just getting harder and harder to get good people and to keep good people and to motivate and to engage good people. And you've spoken a little about that, and I'd like to come back to that. But the second thing you said was a disruption was handling change, getting through the constant change that's happening. Tell our listeners a bit more around that. What sort of change are you talking about there, Craig?
Look, I think it sort of comes at multiple levels. The world's in the mining industry, the world's demand for metals is changing. 10 years ago, everyone was producing coal, and now that's become a much more complicated commodity. And in fact, our company got out of coal because we could see that there wasn't a long-term future for that commodity. So there's this constant sort of change around community expectations of mining, the types of commodities that are in demand. We just work in a constantly changing geopolitical environment. So, when you sort of sell into just about sort of most major economies, what happens in China, its relationship with the West, all of these things sort of matter a lot. We're dealing with the change around decarbonisation and how we reposition the business and how we operate differently. And all of those transitions are just, they're massive transitions to work through.
Craig, you talked about, you mentioned coal and renewables and the challenges that come with transition. That immediately makes me think towards even ethical conversations which can occur within your workforce, particularly from the young people who might have chosen to work for Rio Tinto because it's an incredible technology company, but then at some point they find themselves wondering, are we doing the sort of technology or applying to the sort of things that we really want to be or should be? That poses a leader a very significant challenge for leaders as the different generations are present and the thinking styles and what's important to some people and less important to others. And that's all there in spades in your organization. That's complex and challenging and disruptive. Can you talk us through that?
Well, there's a lot of elements. Perhaps the one that I've been reflecting most on is some of your listeners will be aware of the Rio Tinto conducted a process called Everyday Respect, where we actually interviewed a lot of our employees, and we discovered that there were some pretty serious cultural issues in our organisation around racism, bullying, sexual harassment, just a whole lot of stuff that, I've been part of this industry for a long time, and so, as a leader, I'd have to say I was probably complicit in this, and so, and yet, our employees are all looking at this and saying, "Whoa, I mean, is this the company we all want to work in and be part of?" And of course, the answer is, well, no one was happy with that. And so just going through and responding to that challenge, because, the expectation of not only our employees, but the communities in which we operate, the governments that we work with, is that Rio Tinto has to be a better company than that. And so, to me, these are all these are all some of the, the challenges we face. And we have to reflect on what we walked past. 20 years ago, we started on a massive journey to eliminate fatalities in our business. It took an enormous commitment of all of our employees to achieve fatality-free. And it's a journey that never ever ends, right? You're constantly, every hour, every shift, every day, you're focused on how do you keep your people safe. Well, we're going through a similar journey now about how we ensure that all our employees are treated with, with respect, that different views are heard, that we don't just talk about diversity and inclusion, we actually do it. So, I just think there's so many different elements here. And if you want to attract and retain the best people, and mining is a complex business, we've got to get these things right. If you want to partner with governments to develop resources in sort of new places, we've got to be seen as a partner of choice. So I think all of these things sort of fit together. It's sort of like it's just a giant sort of jigsaw puzzle, and we're all trying to unwrap it, but it's all everything's connected.
Being able to talk about that, Craig, where perhaps other leaders in other companies would prefer to not talk about that. And I believe that the report was made available to the public, fully and unredacted. In there is a not so subtle promise commitment, I guess, when you put it out there and say, here's all of the dirty laundry, and there's a commitment, obviously, to clean the dirty laundry. From where
that's
I sit,
right,
as a management consultant, that's leadership. That's absolute honesty, transparency, clarity, and authenticity rolled up there to say, hey, here's the errors, and we're putting it out there. Do you have a view around that from a leadership point of view, Craig?
Yeah, well, if you don't have the courage to sort of face up to the home truths yourself, then someone else is going to, I heard the phrase, drop a truth bomb on you at some point. And we've had that in our company where we've through hubris or whatever, we've convinced ourselves that we're better than we really are. And you saw that with some of the incidents in Western Australia in the last few years. And I think this is kind of what I love about the company I work in, is that we don't always get it right, but we're willing to have those harder conversations and really sort of try to unpack this, because we know that if you can't, it's pretty hard to move forward. And it's covering stuff up generally doesn't last very well, doesn't work very well, does it, in the long run? So I think as unpleasant and as uncomfortable as it is, it's better sometimes just to rip the band-aid off and have a really good look and try and sort these things out.
That sort of courage for an organization like Rio, that's courage all the way to the top of the organization. And that must mean that there are certain individuals, and I'm not going to ask you to name any of them, but that must mean that there are certain senior leaders who walk the talk, and they, just by the way they put their values first and they maintain integrity, that must rub off on people around them, and it must cascade down through the organization. Is that a fair description?
I absolutely, because if it's not coming from the top, then it's sort of it's going to be a real struggle. I think one of the a company doesn't change its values very often, but the last couple of years we changed our values to care, courage, and curiosity. And I, at first it sort of sounded kind of cool to have three, with starting with C, when it was sort of rolls off the tongue, I can actually remember them. But the more you think about it, that courage to sort of challenge, to ask the really hard questions, it's essential to to drive care within your organization, and you combine it with the curiosity, you know, why is it like this? What's going on here that I don't understand? You know, that I just find those three values just complement each other, you know, there's no doubt that our senior leaders are driving that sort of change within our organization, where, you know, we're not afraid to have these tough conversations and to, you know, to speak up, because if you don't, that's where the rot sets in.
Many organisations, and I'd probably go close to saying most organisations, particularly the bigger ones, will have a set of values. And there's an enormous amount of research around values in organisations. And the research lands pretty clearly around, well, you know, there's a difference between having an organisation that just has a set of values hanging on a wall somewhere, but largely ignored, and an organization that is truly a values-based organization. What I'm hearing there is that Rio Tinto wants to go down that road, very much wants to be a values-based organization. Can you tell our leaders listening in around the world, what does that actually mean or look like or sound like? How do you pick a values-based organization when you're wandering around one?
Well, I don't think it's easy, because, you know, we're talking about 55,000 employees. You know, we're talking about operating, you know, operations in lots of different countries. But you know, you've got to start somewhere. And I think what I've seen is that, you know, if you're willing to sort of be able to speak up, and when things aren't right, and when you're able to sort of have a conversation, you're able to reflect on something where, or you know, acknowledge someone who has shown some care. You know, I think that's kind of that's how it grows. I can't, you know, help but think that our safety journey was you know, incredibly pivotal in this, because you think about you know, how do you keep everyone safe, you know, zero harm, things like that. You can't do that unless you show an enormous amount of care for your fellow workers, and you know, and we all know that, you know, the culture of an organization, of a team, drives their approach, their performance around safety. So I can't help but feel that safety journey that we embarked on more than 20 years ago really kind of started driving us in that direction.
You mentioned the culture of the team.
Yes.
I think Darryl's going to say the same thing.
I know how culture really gets you, Russ. Away you go.
One of the attributes of a high-performance team culture, and I think you were alluding to this, is psychological safety.
Yes.
And you've mentioned that Rio is going through this journey now, which it's essentially a journey of creating psychological safety for the staff at the same time as making sure that they're safe in all ways.
Yes.
So that's so important, to create that psychological safety. It's not just a matter about willing to have the hard conversations. It's about creating that opportunity for people to pipe up, to share what's on their mind. And in an organization of that size, that must be so hard to create that. And it's not just a matter of putting out an email to say, you're safe, please tell us what's on your mind.
Yeah, look, you know, you start with your own team. And, you know, I think it starts with, in my opinion, it starts with a leader being willing to be vulnerable around what matters and what mistakes they've made. And, you know, that's something that I'm trying to learn, is how to be more open with my team, and, you know, share a little bit about myself. As a technical person, it's easy just to have these conversations around technical stuff, and, you know, it's what we do, not so much how we're feeling about work. But to me, that's where it starts. I think we do regular people surveys. The scores, they're useful, but it's the comments that are really valuable, because when you get into the comments, that's when you realize and you start to understand what people are really thinking. And to me, that's a safety valve in the organization. My personal goal is so that the comments or the conversations that are happening in these comments are actually, we surface them and can have them as a team. And so, how I will measure whether there's psychological safety is when people feel as comfortable writing something in the comments as having a conversation in a team. But there's a familiarity. It takes time to develop that, and as people change, it's hard. But if you've sort of got this common set of values, and I know that our company has a very strong sense of values around safety, I have a whole lot of confidence that we can extrapolate that into a whole lot of other different areas. But it's not quick. It's not easy by any means.
Let me just continue on from Russell's comments around culture, and culture drives behavior and behavior drives performance. And so, yes, our leaders should be driving culture. Can you give our listeners just a little insight? And I know, Craig, I'm kind of putting on the spot here to think quickly, but try if you can. Now, you travel the world a fair bit. You're in and out of different countries. You're in and out of different parts of the organization. What's that little habit you have, or that little, those things you do, those things you say that you have found over the years just work in driving the culture the way we want it, toward our values, towards that openness, towards that professionalism? What are those little hints or tips, tricks that you have that you can share with our listeners?
Look, I sort of find I've got to make a personal connection with people, and that's often hard when you're kind of coming and going. So sort of taking the time to get to know some of the leaders and share, create that sort of empathy or bond. In my current role, there's a lot of listening required, and it's a skill set I'm still working on, how to listen better and not try and really understand what are the issues. But I sort of in the end, you have to start with a little bit of an understanding of the organization, the business that you're coming into, the culture of the people, how they like to talk. But there's no silver bullet here for me. It's that, building a relationship that you can continue over time. So I don't know whether that kind of helps or not, but
I think it helps a lot. And there's an authenticity, I think, that you're talking about there, and the fact that you didn't go to a pre-rehearsed agenda of, I always make sure I do this, then I do this, then I do this. And that can be a little bit artificial, but there's a naturalness about you where I'm often asked, are leaders made or are leaders, is it learned? And most researchers say it's probably a combination of both. But you can pick a leader.
A bit of learning there, Daryl, by mistake.
You can pick a leader. There's a naturalness around leadership, Craig. And conversely, when I sometimes see a senior manager who doesn't have that natural leadership style, it kind of shows. What are those attributes for you, Craig, that you've talked a lot about listening. What else for you have you realized and learnt over the years that strengthens that competency set that we call leadership?
Yeah, well, I think, many of us start out learning how to be good managers, time management, task management, organizing people to be in the right place at the right time. But I think what I've sort of seen at least is that one of the key dimensions is really tapping into the hearts of our people. So what actually gets people out of bed so they come to work? And so for some people, the more introverted of us, it's the technical challenges. But what I've sort of also found is that people want to see the bigger picture. They want to understand where we're heading. And what they actually look to from leaders is context. So the vision, but also the context. Tell it. And so my kind of concept is the old task assignment, CPQQRT. I don't do so well on the QQRT bit. I kind of prefer to allow.
To explain that to our listeners.
Okay. Context, purpose, quantity, quality, resources, and time. So they're the ingredients for task assignment. And so for me, if we understand where we're trying to go, and all our teams do, and our people I'm working with do, and they have the business context. What's going on here? What are the threats and opportunities, the strengths and weakness? Given that view of what's sort of shaping our business, and then you say, well, we know where we want to go. We understand the business context. Then there's still these other elements got to be decided. But probably I think people can kind of pick that stuff up a bit more if they've got that context. Purpose.
Craig, you mentioned the word extrovert, and I think you might have said introvert as well, and you work for an amazingly large and competent technical organization which probably has its fair share of introverts. Mm-hmm. Certainly in
I'm
my
probably
team,
one of them.
as am I. I have found it fascinating over the years to watch the relationship and the tension between introverts and extroverts, particularly in a technical team, particularly in complex situations where you have to really think things through, nut it out sometimes on the fly, and the misunderstanding between them. I find that I've had to explain again and again to the introverts what it actually means to be introverted, to the extroverts what it means to be extroverted, and to get them to understand each other so they don't, on the one hand, they don't get annoyed at each other. On the other hand, they can build on each other's strengths. Have you had that experience? How does that work for you and in Rio Tinto?
Oh, I think it's the same in every business. We have all these different people with different personalities. And I've just found that some of the most useful things we've done is actually start to unpack that. And, to help team members understand that, that this is their preferred style of work. The other person prefers to work like that. And maybe, some of the conflict that we're having here, or the difficulty we have moving forward is because, we are different. We all want to do things differently. But getting people to also recognize that there is a lot of value in that. Those quiet people, that's where we've got to be curious. That's where we've got to listen. And so I think one of the tricks I've been sort of practicing more recently is, whenever we're having a conversation, I try to make sure that I give every person some time to speak. And it's sort of just, for the introverts, they know that they're going to get a chance to speak, so they don't have to sort of get out of their comfort zone trying to break in. And, so it's sort of, I think that personality part of the business, that's really crucial, because it's easy for conversations to be dominated by the loud voices in the room, and that's not necessarily where all of the great ideas come from.
What would you like your legacy to be? Whether it's 2 years' time or 10 years' time, at some point someone's going to give you a gold wash and a push out the door. But for people to say Craig Stegman, let me tell you about his leadership. If you were a fly on the wall, what would be just nice to hear?
I remember, I was starting out as a university student. I attended an industry function. I They'd given me a bursary or something so that I could keep studying. And we were sitting amongst, I was just sitting at a table with a whole lot of really senior industry people. And, they were sharing, their knowledge with me. And I reflected on a lot of the comments, and I still remember some of those comments. And I can't remember the people's name, but I certainly remember what they said. And, so what I'd like to do is sort of, when I'm sitting down with some young people, they may not remember my name, but they remember what I said, and they value what I sort of shared with them. And to me, that's, you can talk about mines you've built and things, projects you've delivered. All of those things are physical milestones, but this business only succeeds on the people. And if we're growing, the legacy is the next generation of leaders, and they can see further than me. That's a great outcome, because they build on what I've learned from other people. Yeah, so I'm thinking of a particular quote.
Young leaders listening in, let's just as we draw the conversation to a close, you've got some young 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds who are technically pretty competent. They've got great degrees from great universities, and their life is ahead of them. And they listen to someone like you, and they think, wow, that's wise words, and that's good leadership. What lessons would you share with them now if you could give them a little bit of advice, brought about by your own journey, if they want to be able to head toward leadership? What would that advice sound like, Craig?
I'd have to say it's never stop learning. So, always remain curious about what's going on. And I think the second element is that you can only achieve things with and through people. And so your ability to work with people, get people to work together to align around a common goal. I think I've said that a few times, but to me, that those sort of skills, they don't, as you said, Daryl, they don't teach them in uni. Although, you can go and do courses on that kind of stuff. But I think, that's, technical by itself will never be, it's necessary, but it's not sufficient.
Kind of that what got you here won't get you there stuff, Craig. And we've heard a number of our guests actually say that. And for our listeners out there, they'll be getting to the stage where they'll be musing and saying, we've listened on these podcasts to a number of very senior executives around the world across different sectors, and they start to talk about this issue of developing beyond your technical capability, developing whether it's your emotional intelligence, your relationship management, your people skills, however we like to call it. But that's what you're hinting at a little bit there, Craig.
I think so. It's absolutely.
Russell, final thoughts and questions from you, my friend.
Craig, I'd love to have a beer with you and talk for hours about this stuff. You've touched on so many points that are dear to my heart.
Well, I sometimes I don't think I get my thoughts out 100% coherently, but they're all there circling around. And every day I see a situation where I sort of can't help but think, maybe I could have handled that differently. Maybe I could have applied some lessons from Daryl along the way better. But no, it'd be great to catch up.
You're suggesting, of course, that Daryl gets his thoughts out coherently.
Well, it's all
Let's not
relative.
go there. Craig, during today's podcast, we've talked about the capability of your people and change as being so critical through this disruptive time. You've talked about culture. We've talked about the importance of psychological safety. You've talked about getting that purpose and those goals and getting them aligned, and how absolutely important that is. I've used words like authenticity when talking to you, but as we close our podcast now, there's one word we haven't mentioned, and it's a word that I would apply to you and to your leadership, and that is the word humility. Craig Stegman, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you today, and we wish you a very, very safe journey, onward journey for yourself and your own career.
Okay, no, thanks, Daryl. Thank you, Russell, for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Craig. Thank you.
Okay, cheers.